713-526-5738. If you'd like to call up, this is the last chance because I'm going to put this this one-hour show on and pretty much go to sleep here. I've, you know... They put me on Thorazine. And it makes me a little drowsy. And I keep drooling on the board. And just, it's no fun.
This is Melinda Smith, and you're listening to the Bossacast Show. I did the most amazing thing recently. I fell asleep without taking my antipsychotic medication. While the meds I am on do not have a sedative effect, for some reason I thought I could not sleep without them. Many strangers have suggested I go off meds.
After four times in the hospital going off my medication and ending up in the hospital, it started to sink in that something's wrong here, that I need these medication, otherwise I kind of go into this weird state and I see things differently. And that's the most difficult thing because there's a lot of stigma attached to having a mental illness.
The longer you stay sick and the more relapses you have, the lower your functioning is. So if you're 17 or 18 years old and you have the wherewithal to find help and get an early diagnosis, the prognosis or the outcome will be that much better.
Who needs to listen to those people? They've been duped. It is obvious schizophrenia is a spiritual experience to grow from. There's likely to be an epiphany and then permanent remission. How long will that take? The medications are always deleterious and are a hindrance to true healing. The medications mask the real problem, and I want to have sex with Tom Cruise.
Melinda. Okay, John, you're talking to Melinda.
Melinda, this is the actual Melinda?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, Melinda, it's so nice to talk to you. What a great little piece you did on the radio.
I should go because I have a horrible harm on my phone.
You're at home by yourself?
No, I have a horrible harm on my phone.
Yeah, we it's the 60 cycles, what they call that, yeah.
Oh, you do.
Okay, well, see you, Melinda.
Oh, I'm on Geodon.
Okay.
Because you're not on Thorazine.
No. When I was in jail, they used to give Thorazine to the people who were homosexuals. And then, so we used to extort them. The Thorazines from them and take them, but you only do that once.
Oh, okay, because it's not.
You only do it once, right? And then you go, oh my God, you know. But I mean, that's pretty screwed up that they basically kept the homosexual people in the prisons, you know, just pumped up with this Thorazine stuff, which basically kills their sex drive, and. As if they were mentally ill, you know, because that stuff is nasty. It's horrible stuff.
I thought it was potassium nitrate they used for that.
No, that won't do it.
I hate it when they calm your libido down too much.
Melinda, you want to leave us with something?
Oh, I don't know. I think the newer medications are better.
Okay.
Who cares? Because I'm an advertisement.
You're an advertisement. There you go. Melinda basically is not shy about the fact that she's twisted.
Cool. We all are to a certain degree.
All right. So we are. Yeah. Okay, Melinda, I'm gonna let you go because that hum is really awful.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Love you.
I love you too. Bye.
The thing to keep in mind is that your relationship with voices is your relationship with yourself and your view of other people, the voices being your thoughts. Now let's see if I can keep that in mind if I begin hallucinating again. Did you ever see girls in school write the letters C and S for change subject in their notes to each other? Didn't that irritate you to no end? What kind of writers does the public school system create? Well, this kind of writer. So CS, change subject. I made the mistake of trying to debate a Muslim about the caliphate in Pact of Umar. It left me feeling stupid with implied xenophobia. The Pact of Umar being something anti-Muslims use to make the point that rule under Islam is unfair. The Pact of Umar, according to these naysayers, says that non-Muslims under the Pact of Umar suffered horribly. The person they argued with said this was incorrect. The Pact of Umar offered protection to non-Muslims. What about today with stonings in Iran and the requirement of women to veil themselves? This is called the segue. Here is Azar Nafisi.
We're all answerable for that. So this is the Iran that I want to very briefly talk about. Now, the first thing, what I want to put forward to you is that what we call Islam in a country like Iran, or what we call Islam the way fundamentalists today define it, is not religion. It is a religion that has been confiscated by an ideology. If you look at the structure of Iranian system, it is far closer to a totalitarian system like communists under Stalin than it is to anything you would call Islamic. And I will just go very briefly into why I think this. First of all, the way this regime came to power, you know that the first thing a totalitarian system does, it confiscates the past. They have to confiscate the past in order to justify the present. They have to say, this is not the way we were. You look at Hitler's theorizing and going back to the Aryan race and the Germanic gods and, you know, and all of that. So the past has to be completely negated and denied. Therefore, people like myself and millions of Iranians, where modern Iran essentially was being questioned as alien. And the first thing that this regime attacked were individual rights, alongside of it human rights, and at the center of it the rights of women, and of course culture, and minority rights. The first 8 months before the creation of a constitution, or having a president, they annulled the family protection law, which protected women at home and at work. Then Ayatollah Khomeini tried to issue an edict about women veiling, and hundreds of thousands of Iranian women came into the streets protesting against this edict. One of their slogans was, freedom is neither Eastern nor Western, freedom is global. And the Ayatollah had to sort of pull back, he had to retreat from his original statement. Then they brought the Sharia law, which to my horror, when I came to the States, found out so many among the policy experts or the academia, in fact, in some way or another, justify. Let me tell you what these Sharia laws are, and they're the same more or less everywhere. First of all, they changed the age of marriage from 18 to 9. Now, any of you who think that it is their culture for a 9-year-old girl to be married to a man 3 times her age, most probably, and at the same time to legalize polygamy and temporary marriages where a man can rent a woman for as many years as he wants to, any of you who think it's our culture to have this sort of obscenity in our midst, I would like to tell you then it's your culture to burn witches in Salem. Not Thoreau, not Emerson, not Hawthorne, not Melville, but burning witches. Slavery is the culture of Confederate States, not William Faulkner, Zora Neale Hurston, Carson McCullers, or Flannery O'Connor. Inquisition is the culture of Europe, and not St. Augustine or St. Thomas Aquinas. They brought stoning to death. It's shameful in the world we live today that in different parts of the world, governments, states are stoning people to death. You know, and we justify it and go to bed, fine with a clear conscience saying it's their culture. And those people who oppose this culture are Western. This is a great insult to people who call themselves Muslims. It is a great insult to say that the desire for life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness is an American entity, is a Western entity, that a woman in Nigeria or Afghanistan or Iran does not want to be happy, does not want to pursue happiness. So, do not think that you are giving us credit by saying that it's their culture. To make a very long story short, the issue of the veil was not the issue of religion. My grandmother, who wore the veil all her life and refused to come out of her house without the veil, used to cry and say, this is not Islam. This is not religion. Because for my grandmother and millions of women like her, veil was a symbol of their faith. It was a symbol of their belief. And once the state took over that symbol, it became no more her belief, but an instrument of power, an instrument of state. It is like saying America is a Muslim majority. It will become soon, maybe. A Christian majority country. Therefore, we reduce Christianity. We reduce America to Christianity. And some people are doing that. And we reduce Christianity to just one aspect of it. Say Jerry Falwell. That from tomorrow, all Americans should wear the cross. Would the cross mean anything if I wear it? So this is the issue of the veil in Muslim societies. Don't let anyone intimidate you. You are not criticizing the veil. You are criticizing imposition of the veil upon a whole population.
You're asking a question about women, and I want to answer it. In Surah Al-Hizab, chapter 33, verse 50, you said 58, it's not, it's verse 59. But anyway, that's okay. It says, Ya ayyuhan Nabi, which means, O my Nabi or my prophet, tell your azwajika, which is your wives, wa binatika, which is your daughters, and the believing women, you didn't put that in here, but it was to all the women. This is not just to his wife, and it's not just to his daughter, this is to all the believing women, that they have to cover themselves. They have to totally cover themselves with abaya when they go out. Now, there's different words that Allah used in the Quran. The other word that He used in Surah An-Nur was the word khimar, and the khimar used to be worn in the back of the head. They knew what that was because a lot of women wore it, just wore it. That was a custom. And He ordered them to draw it down or drop it over their juyubihina, which is the chest area where the cleavage is, and they have to bring it down over. And that's exactly why so many of the women of the time, from the Meccan women, covered their faces as well, because it was just real easy. Drop that down, cover it all up. And they used to be called, they called them black crows, because you couldn't tell anything except that it was black wherever they went. So as far as being annoyed, it means so that women will not be annoyed by what? By men staring at them. You may not be aware of this, but I think many of you are. There's something in Islam called the evil eye. The ayn is something very serious. Nobody wants it. We seek protection from it in the Quran. Allah warns us about it, and how we seek protection, we ask Allah for protection from these things in the last two surahs. You should recite them every night. Ladies, men, both of you should recite this, because it is protection. This is very good. The Prophet ﷺ, when it was revealed, he never left off doing that. So we should do the same. Now, when a woman is going around without being properly covered, there are men non-Muslim and Muslim, and we're just saying men in general, who will look at you with the evil eye because they say, hey, baby, hey, what's up, hey. Or even in their heart, and it's still the eye on you. And Allah is warning you. That's why we warn the sisters, don't turn your hijab into artwork. Don't turn your hijab into an attraction, because that was the whole idea to start with, that you're not trying to cause people to stare at you. And you go out here and you've got, I'm sorry to mention, but some of our sisters, they got signboards with messages about Allah, about Islam, across their chest, across their back. They're walking around with the, they think they're wearing hijab, they got a scarf on and blue jeans. But men are looking at you, and Allah is telling you how to avoid this kind of annoyance. It doesn't mean that, because I know what some sisters' argument is. You know what they told me? Well, if I wear hijab, I'm calling attention to myself. If I'm here with the non-Muslim ladies, I could just dress like they do and nobody notices me. That isn't what Allah said. Don't let the sisters come to you and twist that. You sisters all wearing hijab, you know. But these other sisters, when they come with that stuff, don't let them pull that on you. Because that's not what Allah said, and you know that's not the meaning. It's a big test. I don't want to be a woman. Alhamdulillah, I'm a man. I don't want the test of a woman. It's too hard. I couldn't do it. I don't know how women can do it. I told my wife many times, hijab, I told her, we were riding down the road. My wife does all the driving, by the way. They don't let me drive. If you ever rode with me, you know why. I have two gears, fast and faster. And I don't need a brake because I'll hit something eventually. So they don't let me drive. So here's my wife driving. She would know. You can imagine this. She did it in Saudi Arabia, by the way, in Mecca, which they don't allow that. She said, but I just want to show them that's not Islam. So she, it was a brother Suburban. She put her gear, drove off, and he's standing there going, huh. But we're riding one night. It was so hot. We don't have air conditioning in the car, alhamdulillah. But it's so hot, and it's at night. And I told her, I said, you know, you can take that face cover off. Nobody can see you on the freeway. She said, no, I'm not going to do it. She said, what if a truck passed by? I said, a truck? How is he going to see you at night? He's trying to see the road. Just, you know, you can relax. And while I'm talking to her, she said, you know what? Allah can see me, and I'm happy. I said, okay. So I don't want to be a woman. It's too hard. It's too hard. You girls have so much that you have to put up with, including us.
You just heard Yusuf Estes. Estes was a Christian preacher who converted to Islam after meeting a Muslim and doing business with him. I encourage you to check out Yusuf Estes online, spelled Yusuf Estes. He's a very entertaining and funny man. Insert catchy sound bed here. You have been listening to the Backcase Show with Melinda Smith. This was made in one sitting and it shows. We will see if I can do better at a later date. We will also see if the being off medications thing is possible. We will see if the new hallucinatory content involves jinn instead of demons. It was said that United States Navy Admiral Hyman G. Rickover told the subordinate that used the royal we, three groups are permitted that usage: pregnant women, royalty, and schizophrenics. Which one are you? Similarly, Mark Twain extended this privilege to people with tapeworms.